Welcome to the STAR Coalition podcast. My name is Luke Kramer, Executive Director of the STAR Coalition. We're so glad that you're with us today to meet some of the greatest minds in advocacy, research, and the treatment of those living with central nervous system disorders such as schizophrenia, bipolar, depression, and other indications. And we are very excited to have with us today Linda Stalters. She is the CEO of SARDA, which is the Schizophrenia and Related Disorders Alliance of America. I really do, when I talk about Linda to people, I talk about the fact that she may be the hardest working individual in advocacy. And the reason I say that is because of the progressive programs and the discussions coming out of SARDA have the potential to really shift the landscape of how we view schizophrenia, both as a disease, as an indication, and how we engage our public about the discussion around schizophrenia. So thank you for being here today, Linda.
Oh, it's my pleasure and honor. Thank you for inviting me, Luke.
Well, you have an extensive background in this area. Can you tell me just a bit, kind of what brought you to where you are today?
Well, Luke, I started out as a nurse, and I'm still a nurse, but I progressed through the different degrees. And I started out in ICU, CCU, med-surg, OBGYN, you know, most of the different categories. And really, my heart was with people and their psychic pain. Because the pain that you cannot see and most people don't appreciate is very crippling and affects the whole person and everyone around them. And the people who suffer the most are people with psychosis, people with schizophrenia, schizoaffective disorder, bipolar disorder with psychotic features. And those illnesses bring to the layperson's mind inaccuracies. People flee from people who are suffering with these illnesses instead of helping. And families, when they need the most support, people ostracize them. So we decided in 2008 with a steering committee that was comprised of people diagnosed, people, family members, professionals, attorneys, and the lay public, that we needed to listen to the people who really wanted an organization that focused on the people who are the most misunderstood, underserved, and ostracized and criminalized. And so that's what we set out to do since 2008. And we've transformed quite a bit. We started with taking on the Schizophrenia Alliance program, which is a peer support program for people who live with psychosis. It was developed by and for people who live with psychosis. Mm-hmm. And then we have family support groups, our family for care support groups. And now we really want to, as you say, we want to change the paradigm. We want a real paradigm shift that includes not just the medical treatment, but the treatment by society of those suffering. So we are really championing, we've initiated a movement in the last few years to reclassify schizophrenia spectrum as it really is. It's a neurodevelopmental, neurodegenerative brain disease. So we are working to we have a white paper, mm-hmm. and it's a beginning. We need to expound upon that white paper and submit it to the DSM committee over schizophrenia to include in the description of schizophrenia that it is a neurodevelopmental, neurodegenerative brain illness. So that the criminal justice system, when they look at the DSM, because that's their go-to document, and when people say these are brain diseases, a person doesn't elect to think and believe the way that they are because of their delusions and hallucinations. This is no more an a volitional illness than cancer or Alzheimer's. Then when the justice system looks at the DSM, they will see, yes, indeed, these are brain diseases. It's not a character flaw. It's not because they are criminals. So they need treatment, just like someone who has Alzheimer's. And then also to go farther, we have to get the ICD, which is a diagnostic and treatment tool that we use. And that is through the World Health Organization, so that like Alzheimer's, that is classified both as neurological and behavioral mental health. Schizophrenia spectrum needs to be classified as neurological, behavioral mental health. I'd like to get rid of mental health system. It is all medical. When people are diagnosed and they are then subjected to mental health care, their care simply changes and there is really no parity. So if we can reclassify so that people understand these are neurological, that we eliminate the IMD exclusion for bedding in hospital care, so people don't have to sit in emergency rooms for days and weeks, and sometimes restrained in a non-therapeutic environment, or that they are subjected to incarceration that further degenerates their brain, that we get treatment, that we get people to understand, like we take care of people who have other brain diseases like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. If you have brain cancer, which can cause some of the same symptoms, people are sympathetic.
Right.
They want to help.
Right.
But when you have another disease that is really a childhood disease, most often the brain is already impacted even before birth, as the brain is developing in utero, even sometimes with different genetic mutations, the cortex of the brain is impacted. Mm-hmm. And so the brain, as it develops and as it is impacted by different genetic predisposition or other traumas or viruses or infections or whatever causes the changes within the developing brain, we need to find out what exactly is changing that. We have some indications. There are over 250 genes that are involved with schizophrenia. And when we discover what genes or what things are causing the changes, if we can have personalized treatment and stop the barbaric way that we treat people. You know, we've been treating people with these awful diseases for millennia in terrible, barbaric ways. And we are a civilized community, but we don't treat the people who are suffering the most,
right,
in a civilized way.
You know, when you talk about, because you've got there's a lot to unpack, obviously, from from everything that you say. So, can you give folks a sense right now? So we have classified schizophrenia as a behavioral disorder, right? And
right.
By doing that, obviously, we can perpetuate stigma. We can perpetuate we're going to focus on the behavior of the individual rather than the antecedent. What are the things that may be causing someone distress or anxiety or responding to some of the symptoms they're experiencing. So at this point, we have classified it as a behavioral. So when you talk about shifting over to a neurological disorder, classifying it there, the change in the criminal justice system, parity and social change, all these things are wrapped up in this, and even more in this reclassification. What are some of the biggest challenges that you've incurred with this discussion?
So we were able to get in the 21st Century Cures Act, there was the need and pilot set up to find out what some of the demographics are on neurological conditions. And this is the National Neurological Condition Surveillance System. Mm-hmm. So we were able to get into the language in the Congress Appropriations Committee. It went through the write-ups and markups and everything to include among the two other illnesses, Parkinson's and MS, to include schizophrenia. However, by the time it got to the Senate, there were two organizations that lobbied against having us included in that. I don't know if you want me to say them.
Well, but no. What were the basis of their arguments, I guess?
Well, they didn't want to help us to seek additional funding for the pilot so that if there were additional costs involved to include schizophrenia in that pilot. And they felt like they had already started the process. And they didn't want to even consider us to see if there were any additions or changes that would be necessary to include schizophrenia in that process. Hmm. When we talked to the two organizations, and they said to us, well, just wait 5 years and then have that reconsidered. And I replied, there are too many people dying because of schizophrenia spectrum diseases, especially early on. And how many people are dying of Parkinson's or MS in their early 20s and 30s? No one.
Right.
No one. And how many people are affected by those illnesses? Not nearly as many as people with schizophrenia spectrum diseases. And their suffering is not the same. Their lives are curtailed and they can have productive, successful lives if they are treated. But we need to know how many people really are out there, what the demographics are, so that we can know where we go. There are many more people than are identified at this point that are living with these diseases. And so we are, SARDA, we're in the process of creating a pilot to study the costs of not treating people with schizophrenia spectrum so that we can present those numbers for further funding for research and treatment.
I'm sure that's going to be a very sobering analysis when you mm-hmm. look at the amount of medical care and resources it takes to take care of someone who may have kind of chronic severe symptoms of schizophrenia as compared to really any other indication is, and since this is a lifelong, for some people it's a lifelong disease, it doesn't mean that they can't reach an area of thriving or recovery that allows them to be able to live that fulfilling life that they want. But this is not something that all of a sudden in a year you're cured from. It's something that many people may have to live with forever. So obviously there's a clear point for reclassification. You guys are also doing some very innovative work too on just engaging our communities about the conversation around schizophrenia. I remember one of the really great advocate I was talking to earlier said, you know, schizophrenia is not one of these glamorous type indications. You have a lot of celebrities and people within our society who talk about, hey, I'm living with bipolar or I'm living with depression, but how rare is it someone steps forward to say, hey, I'm living with schizophrenia? It's just not that glamorous side of, and I even hate to use that term, there's nothing glamorous about any mental illness, but it's something that people hide with. But you guys are engaging with a lot of work, like you're hearing voices of support. Tell us a little bit about some of the things you're doing to help try to change the engagement with our communities.
Well, number one, we call them brain health and brain illness instead of mental illness. And so that people understand from the get-go. And so when I speak to other corporations and other organizations, I emphasize that. And so our brain, our Hearing Voices of Support .org is... there are, I think we have 19 or 20 videos. They're very short videos taken from over hour long in interviews of people around the country talking a little bit about their experience and what is helpful. And so the videos that you can see on our hearingvoicesofsupport.org or that you can access through our websites, sardaa.org, you can view those videos. You can make comments on them. There's also a Facebook page, and people can upload their own video if they'd like and make comments of support. And we had in New York, and we did in the Capitol, in the Rayburn Office Building foyer for most of a week, we had an experiential art installation that included these videos in a very innovative way, where people would enter a darkened room that we had to create with pillars of light shining down. A person would walk into that pillar of light, and then a voice would come over you, and you wouldn't know where it came from at first. And it was the person telling their story, and then their video would come up in front of you that was almost like a hologram, but not quite. And then you could hear other people telling their stories, so you were hearing other voices. And then you could walk out of that pillar and walk into another pillar. And then as you left, you could be interviewed and videoed yourself to talk about what your experience was like, and then fill out a very brief survey on how that changed your perception of what schizophrenia is and is not. And so that was very impactful on the people who engaged there. And we're hoping to do that up again out in the Hamptons of New York. Mm-hmm. And we'd like to get more videos. There's one video for families on there that's very instructive by Garen Staglin. And he was very instructive for parents of newly diagnosed. Mm-hmm. In helping their child.
And that's so important, engaging family members and support networks around those individuals, right? I mean, having their
Absolutely.
Voices of support is vital for their loved ones. And so, Absolutely. and I'm sure that since you spent a lot of time in the treatment realm early in your career, I'm sure that you've seen, along with what I've seen, that when you have very strong and really family supports, if it's appropriate for that individual, when you have that type of support, you see people be able to flourish in ways that that those who are more isolated cannot. So I think it's important that you're capturing the voices of loved ones as well as the individual.
Well, And the very, very sad situation with people who have these brain illnesses, they also have a brain impact by anosognosia, so that they don't perceive that they're ill most of them. So often families become part of a delusional system, and the person ostracizes themselves from their family, or their family becomes someone that they are very paranoid of. And so the loving family is so frustrated so many times. You know, the only thing that the lay public knows is what they hear on the media, the horrible things that happen. And that's because a person who is diagnosed is involved in these terrible tragedies, it's because they are not treated. And mostly that's because they have anosognosia. They don't know they're ill. They don't have the capacity to make an informed consent, really, to decline treatment when they are very ill. You know, if someone has a terrible disease of TB, we mandate that they get treatment and that they stay on that treatment to protect themselves and other people. And family members can beg for help when they know their child is experiencing some terrible symptoms that could lead them to harming themselves or someone else, and they don't want to do it. They don't, the person who is untreated would not, when they're treated, want to harm themselves or someone else.
Absolutely. But
and so we deny them treatment. We deny them treatment based on the our misperceived good news, good thoughts that they are capable of making that decision. They are not any more capable, some of them, of making that decision than someone who has Alzheimer's, who's wandering around in the cold without shoes, without without clothes or whatever. We take care of them. We bring them in, and whether they want to or not, whether they recognize or not that they're ill, we take care of them. And furthermore, we notify their families. And if their family can't find their loved one, what do? We put it out on a silver alert. If they come into the police station, if they come into the hospital, we let their families know. If you have what's now called a behavioral or mental health disease, it's a brain illness. If the families are desperately seeking for their loved one, we don't tell them. We don't let them know. They can't help their loved ones. Mm. That is wrong, and we have to change it.
So many ways when we bring up parity, we have such a long journey to go. But I'm telling you, I think that you can feel the winds shifting in this area. And it is really due to people like you and others who have dedicated a tremendous amount of resources and energy into really bringing dignity back to individuals who, like you and I, have it is simply a brain disorder as any other brain disorder, as any other organ in the body, and we have to care for those individuals. And so I do encourage all of you listening, please go to SARDA's website at www.sarda.org. There you will find resources on getting support. There is information on suicide prevention. There's information on all the programming that's going on, a blog, events. There's things happening all over with SARDA and Linda and her tremendous team of volunteers and a board that does an incredible job. And also, please visit www.hearingvoicesofsupport.org. Give if you can, because the work that she is doing is vital to the future of those living with brain disorders and such as schizophrenia. And we're going to walk that journey with you, Linda. I just adore you, and I know that the work that you're doing is important. And I do know the amount of blood, sweat, and tears you put into this, and it is much appreciated.
Thank you so much. Thank you for what you're doing too, Luke. I mean, the STAR Coalition is an amazing organization that can bring us all together to work in a collaborative manner to make things really happen.
Well, we'll keep working together, and I thank you so much, Linda, for being here. I know that you have a busy schedule, and it's important that your voice gets heard. And again, everyone, please visit SARDA.org, SARDAA.org, and HearingVoicesOfSupport.org. So thank you again, Linda, and thank you guys for joining us today on the STAR Coalition podcast, as we like to get together with thought leaders like Linda and others and in this field and talk about topics affecting really all of us. So continue to follow the STAR Coalition on social media and our website at www.thestar.org. It's T-H-E-S-T-A-R-R.org. Until then, we'll see you soon.